You are listening to the Punk News Podcast on March 12, 2014. And this is Features Editor John Gentile. I'm not going to do a big intro this week because I'm pissed off. So this is Features Editor John Gentile, the Punk News Podcast, and I am here with Managing Editor Adam White. Adam, how are you doing? I'm pissed off.
I'm kind of neutral.
We're also here with Reviews Writer, Staff Member Ricky Frankel. Ricky, I'm pissed off. How are you doing?
I'll second your pissed off. Yeah,
I'll tell you, I'm pissed off, and here's why. I wanted to have a nice podcast this week. I went record shopping this week. Yeah, every once in a while, every 3 or 4 weeks in the podcast, we talk about, oh, what cool records you get. I got a Bad Brains record. I got a Clash record. I got a Mata Hoople record. And you know what? It's all nice conversation when everybody's having a good time. But instead, I got to be talking about this child pornography bullshit. I wanted to have a nice podcast, but every week I'm talking about assholes getting arrested. Child pornography. Solicitation of minors, having sex with kids. This is not cool. This is not what I want punk rock to be. I don't want punk rock to be the child sex hour. I want punk rock to be what cool records did you get? What records are coming out there? Excited about what cool shows did you see? So here's what we're gonna do. We're gonna start this week on a real downer, a real bullshit news, and then we'll wipe the slate clean, play a track, read some email, and then get back into what I want the Punk News Podcast to be. So listen, as I'm sure a lot of you people know, that Steve Klein, the ex-guitarist of Newfound Glory, has been charged with sexual conduct with a minor. Specifically, he's been charged with 2 counts of lewd conduct with a minor under the age of 14, 3 counts of lewd conduct with a minor 14 or 15 years old, 1 count of intent to commit a lewd act with a minor, and 1 count of possession of child pornography. He was actually asked to leave the band on December 12th. It turns out he was charged that same day, but the news just came out today. We should point out that Steve Klein has not been convicted. He's only been charged, so there's an important distinction there. Interestingly, between us posting this, the news, and actually just about an hour ago, there was an update. Steve Klein's attorney, a lady named Deborah White, stated a defense. And I'm just going to summarize what she said. We'll update the Punk News website. You can see what her statement is. She says, Steve Klein is not accused of having any lewd actual physical contact with a minor. She says, all charges against Steve are derived solely from online consensual video chats between Steve and some female strangers he met on an adult website. Steve believed they were over 18. The females alleged to be minors in this case are not known females. This means not the prosecution, not the police, and not the defense actually knows who the females are or knows the true age. And 4, the possession of child pornography charge is based solely on Steve allegedly possessing the videos of chats with the female strangers from the adult website. So, I mean, I don't know if we can really comment so much on whether or not we think he's guilty because we don't know. There's a lot to come out. But the point is this, and so we don't know if Steve Klein's guilty or not, although it does seem that like his attorney is admitting that he's been hanging around sex vid chats websites. The point is this, over the past year, we've had a whole lot of child pornography, child having sex with kids, all this horrible stuff. The question is this, are we in the middle of an epidemic, or has rock and roll always been this way, and just technology has made it easier to snap up these guys? And last question, when you're in a band, even if you're in a crappy band, it's really not that hard to get girls' phone numbers and to meet girls. Why are these guys in bands, in popular bands, having sex with underage girls and stuff when they can just go meet any 18-plus girls they want to find? It's not like even 18's that old, you know what I mean? It's not like it's 40-plus, like, what's going on? I'm pissed off. Pissed off. Pissed off.
Wow, okay.
That was a lot.
Yeah.
Well, I wanted to talk about the Bad Brains. I wanted to talk about Billy Joel, but instead I got to talk about child pornography.
Well, I don't want to take away from our in-depth Billy Joel discussion that we're going to have. So, I mean, we'll try to get through this shit and you know, come back around to Billy maybe as a release after having to have all this pent up rage that's what the Joel can offer us. I don't know if this is endemic of anything aside from that it's, I mean, I want to chalk it up more to coincidence than anything else. Like, I assume that, I mean, we've talked about it on past shows that, like, you know, the people that were like, you know, everyone's rock and roll heroes in the 60s and 70s were also complete scumbags a lot of the time. So that hasn't changed. I don't feel that there's a, you know, that there is some sort of epidemic of this happening in punk rock right now. I think that there is a handful of unfortunately very high profile assholes that have all been roped in with it. And given their, you know, unfortunately high profile, we kind of have to talk about them. I mean, it's not like this is some guy from, you know, the local band that's always like the fourth opening act at your shows or something. Like, it's Newfound Glory. So, you know, when they don't do something that is allegedly really super horrible, they're in the news without a lot of effort. So this is just one of these things that just kind of like sucks all the air out of the room. And then, you know, we unfortunately are stuck with talking about it. I mean, the Lost Prophets thing, maybe a little bit less, only because that band, I don't think anyone in our universe really gave too much of a shit about, except that they, you know, they were in the same, they played a lot of the same festivals and stuff like that as bands that we talk about more often. But Newfound Glory, you know, hits a little bit closer to home. They're not one of my bands, but, you know, a lot of people like them. So it's, you know, I'm going to say unfortunate coincidence in the past few months, and I hope that's all it is.
Yeah, John, I mean, I actually share your pain. I was in San Francisco. I went to Amoeba, picked up some good vinyl too. Now we have to talk about this shit. I mean, you'd think that he'd be able to find some 18 plus groupies and not even have to be on sex video chat websites.
That's
you
what
know?
I'm saying.
So I don't know what he's doing here. If I mean, I know he's not, he's accused right now, but still, like, what's he doing on those websites that his lawyer talked about? It's just creepy. Yeah. Also, I mean, I think the band has been playing it right though. They just haven't said a thing. They just kicked him out and just won't acknowledge it and just have kept going on, which I think is probably the right thing to do for now.
Well, they actually did issue a statement. Oh, they which, did. Oh, I should point out, it turned out the incident happened in 2011. We don't know if the band knew about it, but the band did release a statement on December 12th. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but I'm going to summarize. You can read this on the Punk News website. It is with heavy hearts that we must let you know that Steve Klein is no longer with Newfound Glory. We've had our differences with Steve over the years that have led to this decision. We love Steve, however, and personal differences have guided this decision, and we no longer feel that we can work with him. Yada, yada, yada. But I found it interesting that he said we love Steve instead of just saying Steve's no longer in the band, you know?
Maybe they're just hoping he's not guilty, but they still didn't. They didn't acknowledge what he's been, if he was accused of anything. They didn't mention the Correct. Incident whatsoever.
Yeah.
So,
honestly, I think in some ways this news is a good thing, because I think for a long time bands have been taking advantage of young women and stuff, and I think because I think modern technology, like all these sex websites, it's easy to catch people doing bad stuff, you know? Like with Ian Watkins, you know, a lot of the evidence against him was text messages, you know? So we do live in a modern police state, which I'm against, but I guess every cloud has a silver... Well, I don't think every cloud has a silver lining, but the modern panopticon that we live in does have a silver lining, in that I think it's easier to snag sex offenders these days than it used to be, say, 30 years ago. So I would say the number of sex offenses, or the percentage of sex offenses, is probably the same, but more of the guys are getting caught, I hope.
Is this even a band thing? I mean, this was someone, you know, I assume in a non-music creation related scenario, you know, at home on his computer, using it to connect with people in ways that have turned out to be not so wholesome. Like, I don't know if it says anything about music or about the punk scene or about the people in it or anything like that, as aside from the fact that, you know, behind closed doors, you know, people do all kinds of horrible shit, and it's just that given the internet, you can be caught.
I would slightly disagree with you. I agree with your founding concept that let's not use this guy as an example because he's still charged. But let's use Ian Watkins, who's pled guilty. He's not. He didn't become a sex pervert because he was in a band. He's a sex pervert that happened to be in a band. That's what you're saying, essentially, right?
Sure, yeah.
But I would say that with a guy like Ian Watkins, the reason he was able to do all these horrible, I mean, he literally did, like, the worst thing in the world. Like, I don't know if there's anything worse than what Ian Watkins did, is would he have been able to do that if he wasn't, like, if he didn't have all these people bewitched because he was famous?
I mean,
of course, you know, I mean, you don't have to be in a band to be, to get, I mean, there's lots of people that make people do stuff and they aren't in a band. I mean, Charles Manson wasn't in a band and he had tons of people doing stuff for him, you know, so I don't know.
But he was, in some ways, a musician, so that's maybe not a, but it's not a good example.
Actually, you know what? Maybe if you're a mediocre musician, it's easier to get people to do stuff for you, because Charles Manson's music is very mediocre. You know, Lost Prophets is bad, but it's not, like, terrible bad. It's just bad. So maybe if you're too good, you can't get people to do stuff for you, but if you're just mediocre, you can get people to do stuff for you.
I don't know. At least there wasn't, like, meth and, like, involved, you know? Like, I don't know. We'll have to wait and see how this plays out.
Yeah. Well, other than that, I don't know if there's anything else that we can say about this except for
jeez.
What I would say is this is interesting. And then I'll shut up about it. Is it doesn't seem usually whenever anybody in the band is accused of something, a lot of people come rushing to their defense. We don't see a whole lot of people rushing to Steve Klein's defense. Like, if you go to the Newfound Glory Facebook and stuff or whatever, or even if you look on Twitter, it's mostly hate against him instead of, you know, this is a big setup against Steve Klein. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I mean, look how fast they got rid of him. I mean, just immediately.
Yeah, well, honestly, from a business standpoint, you have to, you know.
Yeah.
And I almost want to say, like, I can't necessarily fault them for doing that. Just like,
guys, literally a minute ago, Newfound Glory posted a statement. I'm not even kidding you. You want me to read it live on air?
Do it.
All right. Here's what Newfound Glory said a minute ago. Upon our return from Warped Tour Australia, Steve made us too bad the podcast isn't live. Upon our return from Warped Tour Australia, Steve made us aware of possible allegations that might be made against him. At that point, not knowing all of the details, we made the decision to part ways in order for him to deal with these personal issues. Us four members of Newfound Glory have given our entire lives to this band and will continue to do so. We've been able to play all over the world for the most amazing fans. We can't wait to get in the studio to make a new album, and we can't wait to get back on the road. Just coming off the Parahoy cruise and a surprise show in our hometown, we are more inspired than ever. Thank you so much to everyone around the globe for always sticking with us. The future is bright. So that's really a non-response, you know? I mean,
no, and they really turned it around to start talking about, like, hey, enough about that.
We've got a new line of sneakers coming out next week. Be sure to pick that up at Walmart.
So, I mean, before you jumped in with that, that was kind of the point that I was going to make. I mean, like Klein had been in this band for a long time. He's one of the founders, I think. Wikipedia helped me. Yeah, right? So him being in that band for a long time, if he really gets, you know, stuck with these charges and, you know, and they stick and more of this comes out into the open, well, that's a huge taint on this band that they're gonna have a hard time shaking. Like, that's the kind of thing that just, like, that just colors you, and then you're and then what do they do, right? Like, their reputation is ruined. So I think by not even seemingly not even hesitating, just being like, boom, he's out of the band, we're turning the page, you know, next. But by doing that, you know, I really think they're trying to say, like, how much, you know, although not a lot, but how much distance can we possibly put between the rest of us and this before it comes and, like, drags the rest of the name into the mud?
So
they'll probably have to wait till he's tried, and then they see what happens, and then they'll probably just have to keep going regardless of what the verdict is, and until it kind of becomes old news.
I wonder if we're going to get like an email from someone that's going to be like, hey, instead of referring to him as Newfound Glory's Steve Klein, can you please refer to him as like unemployed guitarist Steve Klein or whatever?
We get like a cease and desist from Newfound Glory's attorney. They're like, dear Punk News, we've become aware that you've been referring to Steve Klein as Steve Klein of Newfound Glory. Well, it lets you know that Steve Klein was discharged from the band on December 13th. Any further reference of Steve Klein of Newfound Glory will result in legal action against your website. You know, so then we'll have to put a retraction, and it'll be a messy. All right, this whole thing's a mess. Should we read a letter and then play a tune, or should we just cleanse the palate, and play a tune?
We still have another. Actually, yeah, let's just go with whatever.
Let's play a tune. Adam, yeah. You want to play your tune first? You want me to play my tune first?
I'm still trying to dig mine up. You're on yours.
All right. So anyway, you know, for some reason I've been thinking, let's play something nice and wholesome. Something nice that can't possibly be corrupted. For some reason this week I've been thinking about Ronnie James Dio, as we all know, second singer for Black Sabbath. But he was also an Elf. He was in Rainbow. He was in Dio. He was in some other bands. What a lot of people don't know is that really Ronnie James Dio predates even the Beatles. He was in like doo-wop groups and stuff before he even joined the Electric Elves, which was the band that became Elf, which sort of eventually became Rainbow. So a lot of people don't know is Ronnie James Dio was actually a semi-popular doo-wop singer. So let's play an old Ronnie James Dio single. This is his third single from 1960 under Ronnie Dio and the Red Caps, and this is called An Angel Is Missing. Punk News Podcast, so let's read some mail, and let's read some happier stuff, shall we? Oh, what did you guys think of that old school doo-wop Dio track?
That was cool.
Not what people are expecting when listening to this show, but after last week, maybe they are.
He's a great singer. I mean, he really is a great singer, isn't he?
Yeah, actually, it turns out he actually used to live near my house.
Do you ever go hang out with him?
No, a friend of mine did get his autograph for me though, who was his neighbor. But his house was like this creepy looking like mansion with ivy going up his the outside of his house.
I'm just so amazed that Dio was able to transition from like a 50s doo-wop singer to like a heavy metal titan. It's like two generations he's crossed. I mean, it's pretty amazing when you think about it that he was willing to push his art in that direction, you know?
Yeah.
So anyway, this is an email, and you'll notice that Adam White gets attacked at the end. As you know, at Punk News, we've been following the whole Pussy Riot thing pretty much since it ever got started. As a lot of listeners know, Pussy Riot was arrested for protesting in the church. Two of the young ladies of Pussy Riot were in jail for about 2 years. They eventually got out, but then they both got arrested a couple of times afterwards during the Olympics and that kind of stuff. So we got an email from a fellow named Roman, and I think Roman's from outside of the U.S., but I'm not sure where he's from. You'll know when I read this letter. Here's what Roman had to say. I've been a punk fan for over 15 years, and like most of us coming outside of the U.S., so yes, he is from outside the U.S. Like most of us coming from outside the U.S., I've closely followed dominative North American punk scene. It's clear that due to its commanding position, American alternative music news outlets' interests, as far as their coverage goes, in anything beyond acts coming out of North America is solely, apart from the occasional non-based... He's saying that North American punk rock websites report mostly about North American punk rock bands. What amazes me is how easy in such context each and every one of these music outlets, including Punk News, picks up yet another story about Moscow-based street art group Pussy Riot, known for their provocative and politically charged works of performance art, which at this point makes them the most well-known punk act from Russia. Punk that was sold by Russian media entirely for the purpose of being the easiest way to label street art activism on a post-Soviet space to the general public. While I, like many, acknowledge their contribution to freedom of expression in Russia and their artistic merit, if any, they have little to do with the country punk scene itself, have never been a part of the non-profit infrastructure, target of show promoters, DIY record labels, or distributors. So what he's saying, even though Pussy Riot's been labeled punk, they're not really a part of the local punk rock scene. Like, I think he's saying he won't see Pussy Riot at the local Russian punk rock shows. It sincerely surprises me how a major punk music news outlet with little to no interest in the existing scene of country with a population of 143 million people picks up a political story and covers it as a major punk story along with the new track from the Menzingers, which is ridiculously good, by the way, and Death of Devo's Bob Casale. And then here's my favorite line. P.S. It's Nadezhda Talakhnova, Adam. Don't stop practicing. Best wishes, Roman. Well, Roman, thank you for the email. As always, you can reach us at podcast@punknews.org. And I'll let you guys take first crack at this. So it was an interesting – I guess we've been taken to task for not reporting on – other country punk scenes, but it seems that even in other countries, the Menzingers, a lot of people like.
I don't understand how I can keep practicing saying that name if I'm not allowed to talk about that band. I don't know what I'm supposed to do here. So first of all, I think the point that he's making is entirely valid, and you know, we don't have anyone that is on the ground in Russia, let alone in mainland Europe for the most part, that is providing us with updates on what's going on there. I mean, if you guys from those areas want to, you know, submit some news, write some reviews, help get people on the punk news world hip to what's going on there, you know, absolutely, you know, we encourage you to get involved. That, you know, we can only really talk about what we know about, and we, being people based in North America, you know, happen to be inundated in this scene. So that tends to be our point of reference for most stuff. So, you know, absolutely we have that kind of like blind spot to stuff outside of North America, or at least outside of like, let's say like the UK and Canada and the US. So that's valid. That's true. I don't think we picked the Pussy Riot story out of obscurity just because there was, you know, there was some punk mention in it and then started running it into the ground. I mean, this has been absolutely, you know, major news over here. It's in, you know, it's in every, you know, all the happenings in that story were in every kind of major North American news website or paper or whatever that I had seen as all that stuff was going on. So it's not necessarily that we're saying that, no, you know, we consider
I'm
Pussy.
I'm going to be back. I think someone's trying to break into my house. I'm not even kidding. So you guys keep talking and I'll be back.
Okay.
Okay. Well, I mean.
So, anyways,
go ahead.
Yeah. So, the point I was trying to make was that I don't think that, we're reporting on them saying that, you know what, that is what's going on as far as the Russian punk scene is concerned. That is the most valid or the most notable thing of the Russian punk scene. It's more just that there is that punk rock connection, I guess, however tenuous, and it was just a major international news story. So it to ignore it based on how worthily, that is a horrible word to use here, how legitimately, authentically punk they were or not, seemed like not the right call for us to make. Like, the story was going to keep happening in the mainstream, and for us to just ignore it and to say, no, we'd rather talk about, the new, oh, I don't know what kids listen to these days, the new Gaslight Anthem single or something, right?
Yeah.
It feels like we'd be doing a little bit of a disservice. Like, we have to at least make mention to it. I guess that's why we did. That's probably why we're going to continue to, is there's more stuff in the news. But that said, totally valid point. We should learn more about what's going on in Russia. Unfortunately, that's not my thing to be able to write. So, if one of you guys wants to submit something to Punk News about, hey, you've all heard about our country now. Here's what's actually happening in the punk scene. We will totally publish it.
I think the website is a North American based website. So I think it's fitting that we talk about mostly North American bands and scenes, but that doesn't mean we're excluding anyone. It's just like it's basically what the readership wants and what we're into. In terms of Pussy Riot, though, I mean, I'm a political science major right now, and I've had classes based on just their incident. Like, just the, like for a solid like day, that's what we'll be talking about and what it means. And so it is a big deal. And I agree. I think to just ignore it wouldn't be fitting at all. It was on all the local media. The cable news networks were running it, whether you watch them or not. I mean, it was an international incident that happened and really called our attention to what's been going on in Russia. So, I think, what was his name? Roman?
I don't have it in front of me. Let's go with Roman until I can correct that.
I'm really sorry
if it's not.
Yes, I'm sorry in advance. But I think what this guy is talking about, I don't think he doesn't really have at least an outsider's perspective of me. I mean, it sounds like he might be from Russia, so I'm just going with that. It sounds like he might not get what's going on and how the West is perceiving it as of right now.
I'm back.
And?
I'm pretty sure someone was trying to break into my house. My parents live like down the street. I live out in the suburbs, but not a whole lot of crime around here. But not a whole lot of crime. But like 2 weeks ago, some guy came knocking on my parents' door, asking for if they needed their driveway done. But and they didn't. But the guy had like no business card or no truck or anything. He just like walked up the driveway, And so it sounded like the guy was scoping the place out. And my car is not in my driveway right now because I'm actually getting a couple of tubes fixed in my changing my car. So and I didn't have any. I don't leave my outside lights on, so everything was dark. So there's like knocking on my door, and like, well, maybe it's my parents because sometimes they'll walk on over. But I'm like, they won't walk over to my house at 10 o'clock. So I go out there, and there's this dude on my property. I keep a baseball bat near my door. So I open up my door, and this dude goes like he's like halfway down my driveway, and he goes running away.
Sketchy. Huh. Real sketchy.
Yeah. So.
You think he's a listener?
Maybe it's Roman. He's so mad that we're not covering Russian punk bands. He's come to get revenge.
His name was Roman. Perfect.
Ha! Okay.
I didn't make an ass out of myself yet. Awesome.
So where are we? I'll tell you what an action-packed podcast. Defending break-ins, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
So basically what we said was, you know, to sum this up for you, John, and for all of our listeners that just heard this 4 seconds ago, you know, we can only approach this from the perspective, really, in that we're exposed to it. And, you know, we're being exposed to it as, you know, Russian punk band Pussy Riot, and it's major international news over here. So that's kind of the lens that we see it through. That said, I absolutely encourage, you know, our Russian listeners or whoever we know that has more knowledge of that scene to go write us the, you know, this is really what's going on with the Russian punk scene article.
Yeah. And then I mean, it sounded like he didn't say where he was from, did he?
Nah, I think he's from Russia though.
That's what my guess was. Yeah. And I don't think I think he's kind of seeing it out of the scope of a typical Russian, living in Russia, but I don't think he really seems to be getting how big of a story it was here and I guess in Europe too.
So, you know, though, like I totally get that. I get where the frustration would be because, you know, let's say I'm super involved in, you know, in what's going on in the Canadian music scene, and there's all kinds of cool stuff going on here, and then, you know, fucking Justin Bieber goes and, you know, drives a car into a donut shop or something like that in Miami. And then all of a sudden, like, that became, like, the only conversation happening about Canadian music. I'd probably be shouting from the rooftops to try to change that conversation.
True. Yeah. He's not wrong. How about that?
Yeah.
For sure.
All right. Well, fair enough. Well, anyways, let's get on to some more, other interesting news is that there's been an unlikely collaboration between Mick Jones and Paul Cinnamon of The Clash, along with Frank Ocean of Odd Future and just Frank Ocean, and Diplo, who produces for Major Lazer, MIA, and a whole bunch of other acts. The track is called Hero. I gotta say, I mean, it's part of Converse's series, where they bring a whole bunch of artists together and they record together, artists that wouldn't normally record together. I'm looking over my shoulder every 30 seconds while recording this podcast. The point is there's a new track, including members of The Clash. Honestly, I wasn't blown away. I'm a huge Clash fan, not a huge Frank Ocean fan. I think he's talented, but I think his songwriting is kind of lacking. Diplo's got some cool jams, but I thought this was just kind of so-so. And just personally, I wish The Clash, I wish Paul Simon and Mick Jones would stop like writing Massive Attack type songs and write at least a few rock and roll bangers because they're so talented at it. They just don't want to do it, you know?
Yeah, I wasn't a huge fan of the song. I thought it was kind of boring, but I didn't know, like, I just kind of sat there thinking after it was over. I'm like, okay, now what? You know?
I sort of feel that it was inoffensive enough that I was kind of okay with it. Like they weren't trotting this out as like Frank Ocean and The Clash are doing all kinds of stuff like that. Right. I mean, like despite the fact that like, that's what a lot of the headlines, maybe ours included, sort of implied.
No, actually I'm proud of Punk News. There's another article we're going to talk about too. Punk News was very careful. So other websites said Frank Ocean and The Clash, but we just said Frank Ocean, Mick Jones and Paul Simon. And another article coming up that Punk News was more correct than other websites.
Yeah, so, I mean, so given that it was, you know, it wasn't produced to sound like, you know, Frank Ocean singing over, like, White Riot or something like that, right? Like, since it wasn't like that, and it kind of was in the vein of the you know, the dubby stuff that, well, at least that Paul's been doing. Because, like, I was comparing this to, like, The Good, the Bad, and the Queen, which was that project that Paul Simon was in with
Blur, David Album, right?
David Album, yeah. So, you know, it's sort of in that same chilled out, you know, dubby realm of things that you could extrapolate out from, you know, some of The Clash's, you know, weirder stuff. So I don't know. I was kind of okay with it because it wasn't overbearing. It wasn't goofing it up. It wasn't like trying to like wear this crazy combination on its sleeve by doing something that was like completely over the top. It was just sort of what it was.
If this was just Frank Ocean and Diplo, would you say it was a good song?
I have no idea. It's forgettable. I probably would have done that. I think I'm more okay with it because it wasn't offensive.
Yeah, it wasn't offensive.
Yeah.
No. Not at all.
I mean, why do you guys think that, like, you know, Mick Jones and Paul Simon have written some of the best rock music ever. Why do you think they don't write rock music anymore? Do you think that it's just they're so sick of playing White Riot every night for 6 years straight that they literally just burn out on rock and roll forever because they played it so much all the time?
Well, I mean, I'm thinking back to Mick's Carbon Silicon, the band that he has with the dude from Generation X.
Yeah, and it sounds like it would be awesome, but it's not.
No, it's not. But I guess that's a little bit more traditional rock songy structured than I guess otherwise. but yeah, like I've always gotten the impression that like that Paul's interest these days is far more in, you know, in visual arts and stuff like that. And, you know, he's doing the music stuff right now to have a little bit of fun, but it's not, you know, it's not for a long time, you know, where his interest has lied. And then Mick always plays better off of, like, Mick played better off of Joe. Like, I'm not totally convinced that, like, Mick Jones in and of himself, you know, is necessarily someone that I would have gone and latched on to and listened to. Like, I think, like, you know, he needs the dynamic of being in that band with the kind of music that band was writing. Like, I wasn't listening to Big Audio Dynamite or anything like that. And if there was just Big Audio Dynamite, I don't think I would have heard it at all. So, you know, they're the Clash because they were the Clash. They're not the Clash because they're a bunch of, you know, independent people that are all in and of themselves the Clash.
True, but the Mick Jones vocal Clash tracks are so good. Is that because he wrote a lot of those tracks with Joe Strummer, you think?
Probably.
Well, that and he wrote them for that band, right?
Well, also, I think these, you know, I think because these guys, you know, were in the Clash, I think no matter what they do, they will get attention. They will get some sort of notoriety for what they do, no matter what genre it's in.
Actually, you know what? That's a good point. In some ways, at least I'm being a little too mean because I'm saying, wow, Mick Jones and Paul Simon, this isn't as good as the greatest thing you ever did. I'm disappointed, you know? Which is, I mean, when you think about it, I'm giving them the hardest possible standard to live up to in punk rock. Is it as good as London Calling? Well, every record except for like seven others will fail that test, you know? So...
Well, they raised the standard. That's the thing. They were the ones to do it.
Yeah. Speaking of another band that raised the standard, Ron Riez, who was being quiet about his break from Black Flag in an interview with Canada's Beatroot. Adam, have you heard of this online magazine, Beatroot? I've never heard of it before.
No.
Yeah, it's some small and it was weird, and I know, well... Ron Reyes was saying that he wasn't going to comment on a split with Black Flag at all, but actually for this small online magazine, Beatroot, Ron Reyes briefly commented on why he left Black Flag and what happened. Basically, in this article, which I if you're into this whole debacle or Black Flag at all, I highly recommend you reading it. In it, it's basically Ron Reyes responding to the Mike V Rolling Stone article. As the Punk News listeners might know, Ron Reyes was fired from the latest incarnation of Black Flag, which includes Greg Ginn. Was it Dave Klein? Is that the guy's name? Of Screeching Weasel? I think it's Dave Klein, right?
Yeah.
And the drummer, who was just called Drummer, Ron Reyes was fired on stage, and Greg Ginn brought in Mike V of the Rats as the new vocalist, meaning that Black Flag and Good For You are now identical bands. And then in an interview with Rolling Stone, Mike V of the Rats basically said Ron Reyes wasn't up to snuff, you know, and he wasn't good. That's why we fired him. But I think pretty much everyone saw through that charade, if you will, or that facade. But nevertheless, Ron Reyes commented in an interview with Beatroot. Basically, what he said, during the recording of What The, that was the last Black Flag album, during the recording of What The, Greg Ginn was distracted and didn't even really care about the recordings. And after every song, Greg Ginn told Ron that he was doing great. And Ron Reyes even said that Ginn threatened his family and that Ginn specifically approved the polarizing cover art of What The. So I'm kind of glad Ron Reyes shot back. I think this is probably going to be the last chapter of Black Flag. I don't expect to see Black Flag on tour with Mike V, to tell you the truth.
They just fulfilled the existing shows that they had with him, and then that was it?
Actually, the very last show, what happened was I feel so bad for Ron Reyes, because as history remembers, in 1980, Ron Reyes was mad at Greg Ginn on stage. Or he was mad at the audience, actually. So he walks off stage, but the band kept playing. Like, and he expected the band to stop playing. Because, you know, back in the 80s, punk rock bands would do that all the time. Like, somebody would just walk off stage and the band would just destruct, you know? So we expect the band to self-destruct. But instead they kept playing, and then they replaced him with Des Cadena shortly afterwards, who was, like, Ron Reyes' best friend. But as everything is cyclical, on the last Black Flag show, I think it was in Australia, on the last song... second to last song, Mike V walked on stage and said to Ron, "You're out of the band, you're fired." So Ron Reyes just like walked off stage, just like he did when he was fired from the band in 1980 or 1981. I guess it was 1980.
All right. This has just been one dragged out mess. I mean, I was thinking the same thing. This kind of reinforced what I was thinking, this article. It just seemed like Greg kind of micromanaged everything, and then he has, like, at least from the quotes that Ron gave in this article, it seems like he just has, like, this God complex of, oh my God. I mean, did you read the part about where they talked about about Flag and how people were siding with them?
In the article, actually, this is a very, very important part, is, as people remember, at first, Flag and Black Flag weren't beefing. In an interview with John Gentile of Punk News, both Keith Morris and Steven Egerton said, "We're not really looking to beef with Black Flag, we're just doing our thing and they're doing their thing." And then in an interview in Punk News with John Gentile, Ron Reyes said, "Yeah, I'm not looking to beef with Flag, I think everyone should do whatever they want to do." But then, quite strangely, Black Flag released a press release saying how, quote, terrible Flag was. And everybody knew that was Frodo. Flag is awesome. In this interview, Ron Reyes says he didn't want to put out that press release. He said to Greg Ginn, "That'll backfire on you." But Greg Ginn sent out that press release anyways. And sure enough, it did backfire on him. I mean, I think it's amazing that Greg Ginn doesn't understand that people can see right through this phony baloney. Like, when he said Flag was bad, everyone knew that was BS. You know, when he said that Ron Reyes was the fault, Black Flag wasn't that great, everyone knew that was BS, you know, so.
Yeah. Well, did you see there's, from the article, it says, if we come against those guys, we are going to look like bitter old men. Then Greg said, "Fuck it, I am bitter," which, that said everything. That just said everything to me. So I think it's Greg all. It's just Greg kind of seemed to be pulling the strings the whole time.
Adam, you have anything to add to that? Is Adam there?
I'm here. Everyone, you included, John, being the biggest, Black Flag maniac that I know. Like, this must be completely tiring for you at this point.
Honestly, I'm sort of, to tell you the truth, and this is a little sycophantic? I always get that word wrong. Sycophantic, what's that word? Sycophantic? I'm being a little bit of a vampire, and I'm sort of enjoying the destruction of Black Flag itself, because as the listeners, the whole time I'm like, Flag is good and Black Flag is good. You know, they're both cool. They're not really in competition. And these bands aren't in competition with each other. Flag was doing something entirely different than Black Flag. But I really had to change my stance when Black Flag attacked Flag. You know, my opinion is, if nobody's bullying anybody, let everybody do whatever they want. You know, doing to others. If nobody's hurting somebody else, you know, then people can do whatever they want. I'm not in for making people feel bad. But if somebody attacks another person and is essentially trying to bully them, well, then you got to beat the shit out of the bully, you know? And in this case, yeah. Ron Reyes and Mike V, who, like, why does Mike V have all this power in Black Flag? He doesn't have anything to do with Black Flag at all, you know? But, like, they're trying to bully Flag and my main homeboy, Keith Morris. So, I mean, if you got to pick between Keith Morris and Greg Ginn, you know who I'm siding with, you know?
I was always siding with Flag. I
wasn't siding with either. I thought they were both cool. And I saw Flag live twice. It was amazing. I saw Black Flag live. It was pretty good, to tell you the truth. But, I mean, if Greg Ginn says, you got to pick between me or Keith Morris, well, I'm picking Keith Morris, you know? Yeah.
Absolutely.
So the point is, I think Greg Ginn is a phenomenal, phenomenal artist, and he's really hurting his reputation because, like, he was never known for being a nice guy, but for the longest time, people were like, he's not a nice guy, but he's a guitar genius, and he is a guitar genius. But because people have such a bitter taste in their mouth about it now, they're saying, well, he's not that great at guitar, which is ridiculous. Greg Ginn is probably the greatest guitar player ever. But the point is, if he's going to be a jerk, If he's going to be the jerk to being a jerk, the more not physical pain, but the more, you know, annoyances and hatred, or not hatred, but the more assaults on him verbally from the fan base, the better. Because if you're going to try to bully somebody, then you should get bullied, you know? And so he's trying to bully Flag. So I'm saying, you know, the more people, you know, lay out on the Greg Ginn for being a bully, I'm fine with that, you know? But I think this is the end of Black Flag. And I almost think Greg Ginn's got a self-destruction complex, to tell you the truth.
I would not argue with that.
Me either.
Moving on.
Moving on, baby. Oh, Adam, you like this? Go ahead. You send us. You like this story? I do too.
Yeah. All right. So, Fucked Up have announced the details of the release of their upcoming Zodiac series release. This is the Year of the Dragon 12-inch. It's going to come out on April 15th, 2014. Which is that Record Store Day? Is it coincided with Record Store Day?
Record Store Day is the 19th.
Okay, it's close enough. On Tank Crimes Records, as part of the Zodiac series, of course. The initial pressing will include a bonus flexi disc that will include a shorter edit of the title track. And you can find the link to the cover art and the track listing on Punk News. So the A side of this sucker is Year of the Dragon, which, if it's like any of the other Zodiac series things, is probably like 45 minutes long. And then or maybe more like 7 or 15 or something like that. The B side of this has a couple covers. The first is I Want to Be a Yank by Cardboard Brains, which is a classic old Canadian punk band. And the other is Disorder by The Ugly, which I would not be surprised if that's the case with them too. I will find out in 14 seconds. And I mean, like, the Cardboard Brains, it's cool to see them playing some tribute there, because, like, Cardboard Brains, you always hear, like, Nardwuar and the Evaporators are always talking about them or playing covers of their stuff or things like that. The Ugly, that's right. The Ugly were on the last Pogo. And boom, they were on the last Pogo. Cool. So, yeah, they appeared on that. I love that record. Where is it? Anyways, they were on the last Pogo, which is this classic Toronto 1979 live punk show that featured... well, I guess The Ugly, although I completely blanked on that, along with, like, bands people have heard of, like Teenage Head, The Vile Tones, a bunch of others. Although Teenage Head, I don't think actually appears on the compilation for, like, licensing reasons. But anyways, classic Toronto punk covers from Fucked Up on this thing. And there was a little bit more Fucked Up news that came out in the past few days, too. They released a teaser video, which was just titled Glass Boys, is some kind of like low and slow music with a bunch of people slow motion moshing in the background. That basically states that their new record, which we are going to say is probably called Glass Boys, is out in the summer on Matador. So you can find the link to both of those things on Punk News. So there we go. Fucked Up news. John, you excited about this? It's on one of your big labels.
Matador? Tank Crimes. Yeah, Tank Crimes is cool, man. I mean, they put out records by Kicker, and I love Kicker. But I also love F Up, man. I think F Up is, without question, one of the most interesting modern punk rock bands. I would say they're, well, one of the top five modern punk rock bands, to tell you the truth. I love their Zodiac series. Like this is going to be... like, whenever I fold my laundry, I listen to the Zodiac series records. And I think Year of the Dragon is going to be awesome. Year of the Pig is my favorite thing by F Up so far. This Year of the Dragon thing is going to be awesome. I think they've actually, like, played it live a couple of times. And actually, apparently they played Glass Boys, the whole album, live at the last Long Winter of their Long Winter series that they do up in Toronto. So, I mean, honestly, I'm super hyped for this. I would expect Glass Boys to be more compact than David Comes to Life. I think David Comes to Life was good, but it was a little too long, a little too mid-tempo. I think Glass Boys is not going to be like classic effed up, but it's going to be, you know, shorter, snappier, maybe more popish. I'm really looking forward to that, and I'm really looking forward to Year of the Dragon. And I will be at the Tank Crimes Brain Squeeze Fest. So come say hi to Johnny G when he's there.
You know, these Zodiac ones have just been really cool releases. And I mean, when a lot of people talk about Fucked Up as being one of these bands that takes, you know, hardcore as a starting point and stretches it in ways that it doesn't tend to be stretched by most bands. Like, these are great examples of that because, like, shit, these are really long, you know, intricate, you know, detailed opuses that are on these things that shouldn't work with hardcore, you know, just by the definition of that genre, but it does. So,
and actually, you know, I've got breaking news that hasn't been released outside of the effed up camp. Well, it's been released in the very secretive club that anyone can be a member of, but not that many people are. Is not only that, Year of the Hair is also has also been finished recording, and that's going to be out sometime this summer.
Cool.
And well, I mean, there was supposed to be Year of the was it Year of the Hair, and there was another one that they hadn't, they were sitting on still, was it not? Maybe I'm wrong about that. But anyways.
I think you're right, Act. Maybe it is Year of the Hair. I think you're right, though.
But anyways, yeah. So that one's also been waiting. Do you have any favorites out of this? You mentioned you like...
I'd love... Like, that was, like, honestly, Year of the Pig was kind of a record that really broke effed up as, like, this weird, weird band. It's still my favorite. I love Year of the Pig. It's the long... I think it's the longest. But it, or no, actually, maybe it's not. Maybe it's the second longest now. But it's got the largest arc to it. But I also really like Year of the Ox, because Year of the Ox has got that really weird, almost like techno second half. So
there's a lot of jazzy instrumentation on Ox. Like,
yeah,
it's interesting. I'm a fan of Tiger. I like Tiger. Yeah. I like the second half of Tiger that gets all kind of like just shoegazy and weird. But Pig is such a vicious thing. Like, it is a mean song. It's written about a very, very kind of like, I mean, talking about crimes, like a very like horrible event in, you know, up here in I guess Canadian current events or something like that, which is that there's been this epidemic in Vancouver of Aboriginal women and sex workers going missing and turning up dead and all this, and that, like, that was the whole focal point of Year of the Pig. And it, like, so it's just like it's a mean, heavy record to me. So I haven't listened to it in a little while just because it's not something that I tune into lightly. But Tiger, for some reason, is my, like, you know, I want 17 minutes of Fucked Up to happen kind of thing.
Yeah, well.
Ricky, you've been totally quiet about this, and we keep
going. Yeah, I've been absorbing. I got into Fucked Up about 6 months ago, so I'm still playing catch up. Not really. no, I just, I happen to see them on the rotation on the radio show I do, and it was David Comes to Life. And as soon as I heard Queen of Hearts, I'm like, whoa, I should kind of like backtrack and see what this band's all about. Cause I really liked that record. But I'm dying to see these guys live. Like, they look like they put on a fantastic show. I have Year of the Rat, David Comes to Life, and I just picked up the Police EP, which I'm really digging right now.
I've seen them 5 times.
Okay, awesome. I mean, it just, like, though, I've seen some YouTube clips of them playing. It just looks insane. So yeah, I'm excited for this one.
Cool. All right, I suppose we jump to the next here. Which is where? Oh God, do we have to talk about this?
You want
to
skip this one? I mean, do we really need to even talk about this one?
All right, let's mention the title, and then we'll all make like a raspberry noise, and then we'll move on. So, the former girlfriend of Lost Prophets singer Ian Watkins has been charged with child pornography offenses.
God. Right.
Do we have another song?
Yeah. What are we playing?
Well, I got another track. If you, Adam, you got a track? If not, I got a track too.
Do yours. I'm still trying to actually get clearance for mine. So,
you know, with all this child molestation and stuff. We need something more wholesome again. What a lot of people don't know is that Lemmy Kilmister, before he was in Motorhead, before he was in Hawkwind, before he was in another band before that, was in a sort of R&B British boy, Beatles group called the Rockin' Vickers. And they were a pretty wild group. They played, their first single was actually, or no, actually was their second single, was actually a cover of a song popularized by Dean Martin and Frank Sinatra called Zing Went the Strings of My Heart. So this is Zing Went the Strings of My Heart by the Rockin' Vickers featuring Ian Lemmy Kilmister on guitar. From Punk News with yet another wholesome rock and roll R&B doo-wop type track. Did you guys expect to see here Lemmy Kilmister covering a song popularized by Tony Bennett, Dean Martin, and Frank Sinatra?
Not at all. I didn't see that coming at all.
You keep finding all this stuff that is so... It's such a journey deep into the psyche of John Gentile. Like,
well, we need some happiness in the world. There's so much misery these days. We need happiness, happiness. So hearing Lemmy before he was Lemmy covering Frank Sinatra. Well, he's not really covering Frank Sinatra, but you get my point. It makes me happy. And also, I'm a big fan. I've said this before. I feel as though the youth isn't as musically educated as my generation was and as the generation before me. I feel as much of the youth doesn't even care about the earlier groups. They think that their groups were the first groups ever, and that's all that matters. When really they're only robbing themselves, because the more I dive deeper into music, and the more I see connections, and the more rarities I find, the greater understanding I have of different bands, and the greater importance, it seems to me, of bands doing something interesting. You know, like, for example, when F'd Up put one of their records, credited one of their records to Nank or Phage. I think that's the Police single. Well, it might have been the ZZO ZZ single. Do you guys know what the Nank or Phage reference is?
I do not.
I do not.
That's the Rolling Stones. I mean, it's like an in joke. Early on in their career, the Rolling Stones would credit themselves as Nank or Phage after one of their roommates, but when they didn't want people to know that they wrote it, so they would credit to Nank or Phage. Well, that's what F'd Up did on one of their earliest singles. So it shows not only how clever the Rolling Stones were, but how clever F'd Up is in doing something like that. I feel as though the youngest kids are missing out on the joy of the interconnectivity, the tissue, the viscous material between the old bands and the new bands. And also, it brings a greater point is, you know, Lemmy's still kicking ass. Lemmy's still kicking ass. Kicking ass when the Beatles first started, you know? And I would be able to say the same thing about Dio, that he predates the Beatles, but unfortunately Dio passed away, R.I.P.
I think there is something nice about finding things out that not everyone knows about. So I think the fact that it's like almost like a secret, it makes it kind of gives it a little more edge and makes it kind of cooler.
Well, speaking of things that are cool, here's a very, very cool band that a lot of people like. I like this band too. Not a huge fan, but I'm a big fan of this band. White Lung has released a new video off their upcoming album on Domino Records. I don't know if we know the name of the album yet, but the song and the video is called Drown with the Monster. Are you guys down with White Lung? Are they a super awesome band, like everyone's saying, or are they just a pretty awesome band?
I'm going to say that White Lung is a pretty awesome band.
Yeah, I agree.
I agree, too. I thought this was a cool track.
I thought this track was cool, and White Lung's got a cool sound, but I guess I'm not a mega fan because, they're a big fan of like this high-pitched white noise that a lot of these kind of bands are with, and so I feel it robs the music of some of its punch. Like, the guitar is very much a crust-punk style guitar, but it's so muddy that you can't really hear it. And plus, I think with White Lung is like they start off with a cool idea, like their song sounds cool, but it doesn't progress, you know? Like, think of Nervous Breakdown by Black Flag, one of the great songs of all time. It goes from point A to point B to point A to point C, whereas this is just sort of like the same tone throughout. It's awesome, but I feel as though White Lung is on the verge of really expanding if they could just go that extra musical mile.
Yeah, I could see that. I get that. Totally.
Adam?
Whoa, sorry, son. I'm cutting out here. This is odd. Anyways. Oh.
Adam, what do you think of this White Lung track?
Sorry. My biggest criticism of White Lung is that a lot of White Lung stuff sounds like White Lung. So that what you're talking about, the fact that they have that sort of incredibly high, what's the word for it that I'm looking for,
like
here?
White noise, muddy-ish sounds?
Yeah, that thing that just sort of permeates their whole, you know, their whole record when you, or their whole output when you listen to it. I mean, I'm cool with that if I'm sitting down to like rock through a White Lung record, because they're short and they're sweet and you get that, you know, that whole aesthetic is just sort of washed over the whole record. I think it makes them in, you know, when you're in isolation or when you're listening to them like in a mix of other things, like it sticks out. It's a little bit jarring. Mm. But I think that I bought Sorry on vinyl when I was in San Francisco last time, and it was, you know, I love that record. It's great. But I don't know if I would necessarily like shuffle a bunch of White Lung songs into a bunch of, you know, Menzinger's tracks or something like that. Like it sort of lives and exists on its own. The aesthetic of it, I think, matters a lot to how it's heard.
See, I actually take it from the opposite perspective, to tell you the truth, Adam, is I think White Lung songs are really cool, like one or two at a time, but after like three or four, they all kind of start to sound the same to me.
I can get that. And I think that like if this record that comes out turns out to be like 45 minutes long, then yeah, that sort of thing would definitely do that. But like if we're just like, you know, if we're going to clear through 9 of these songs in 10 minutes or something, then I'm okay.
Well, fair enough. You know, speaking of that's a very popular hip band in the hip cool people. But here's a band that's popular and hip with the uncool people. Shitty Weekend, which includes members of the Taxpayers and Transients, have not only released a new record, but they've also released a new single. The new single is called Shit Week, and I dug this song. I gotta say,
I too. Go ahead, Adam.
Sorry, I mean, I had prior to this show, I had not really heard anything about this band, so I don't know how much we have actually been covering them or anything like that.
It's a brand new band, like brand new.
Yeah, so, it is.
I mean, like, kudos to Brittany for writing up the article. And it's funny, there's a comment in the comments from here from Jeff Rosenstock saying, like, wow, this is awesome. And it is, and it's incredibly fun and loose, and, you know, it makes me happy. So this is something that I think if Can we grab this? Can we play a song from this? That would be great.
Yeah, I think it might be downloaded for free. Let's take a look. You guys, look, talk about the next track. I'll see if we can get this for free.
All right, yeah. See if we can play a song from that, because that would be good. I mean, it's cool that Jeff likes it, because
we can get it for free. Yeah.
All right, we'll play a song from that a little bit later in the show then. It hits a lot of the same notes, I think, that Bomb the Music Industry does, not necessarily sonically, but just in terms of how
funness,
how fun and loose and kind of ramshackle it seems. That's a good word. I'm going to go with ramshackle.
I'll be reviewing this, so so far I like
I'm a bass player in this band. What
I wrote and recorded this album. Holy shit.
There are other music that we got to talk about that's popped up here. Boston, Massachusetts band Somos are streaming a new song called Distorted Vision from their forthcoming release, Temple of Plenty, which is due out on March 25th via Tiny Engines. You can stream that song on Punk News. It's streaming on SoundCloud if you want to check it out. The band's also hitting the road for a pretty... let's see here, about a month-long tour, kicking it off in Providence, Rhode Island on March 21st, and basically rolling all along until April 19th. Looks like they are going up and down the east coast of the U.S. That's probably not entirely accurate, but I'm Canadian, so it's all the same.
It's like a figure eight, because they play Pennsylvania, then they go to Georgia, then they play Pennsylvania again, then they go to Massachusetts and New York, then Ohio, then they play Pennsylvania again, and then they wind back up in New York.
You see, this is my reading of American geography, is that I'll see a list of tour dates, and I'll scan through it, and I'll go like, all right, I didn't see, like, California in there. East Coast, right?
Well, it's a figure eight down the East Coast is what this tour is.
So that's okay. And I can do that on the East or West Coast. If it's something that, like, is sort of in the middle... I'm totally screwed up. Like, I couldn't see, like, a list of tour dates and go, oh, they're playing a Midwest tour or something, because, like, maybe they are. Is this place Midwest? I don't know. Same with Texas. Like, what does Texas have a coast? No, I know it physically has a coast, but, like, would you consider a bunch of tour dates in Texas part of an East Coast tour?
No, that's the Dirty South.
That's the dark. Okay, there you go. So, anyways, America. I don't know. I checked this out. It's pretty chill. What do you guys think? It's a lot more together than the Shit Week stuff.
Yeah, a lot of people get excited about this band. This is very much like a Menzinger's Crowd kind of tune. It's not bad. It's just not my thing. It's very sedate, very relaxed. I'm looking for more of the hopped up jams.
Yeah, I thought the same thing. I mean, It was pretty laid back. I was expecting a little bit more, like, in your face things, especially from this label, band that's on this label. So, but it's not bad.
All right. Well, let's clean up with one more tune. Not a song, rather. We're going to talk about one more track, then we'll do one more article, and then we'll play a track, and then that'll be it. Chuck Reagan of Hot Water Music, right?
Yes.
Reagan of Hot Water Music has released a video for his song "Something May Catch Fire." It's going to be on Till Midnight, which is going to be out on Side One Dummy on March 25. It's a pretty countrified track, modern countrified track. Were you guys down with this or not?
I hate to beat this drum because I just made like a big stupid Canada joke, but. I can't watch this video because I'm not in the continental United States.
USA! So, USA!
Yeah.
USA!
I don't know what this sounds like. Whatever.
Ricky, are you a Hot Water Music fan?
I am. And I've seen them live, and I've seen him do his solo thing live. And, I mean, was the last album that he did, his solo album, was that... Which one was that? Was it
Eggy Breaky Heart.
No.
Chris Gaines.
No. What was it called? Covering Ground. Yeah, yeah. This one, compared to Covering Ground, I can actually get with a lot more. This one has this seems more like a country rock kind of thing instead of like just like a solid country song. He's added drums, which is nice. And the melody is pretty catchy. I don't think you're missing much from the video though. It's just him playing in a field with his band and then like teenagers kissing and stuff like that. That's what it is. It is. That's all it is. Like, I couldn't tell you more.
I honestly wasn't really feeling this. I'm not a huge Hot Water Music guy. I mean, it's not bad, but it's just kind of like country rock or however you want to put it, which there's nothing wrong with that. But it doesn't seem like on the country western station, lots of guys already do this, so I don't see what this is bringing new to the table. And honestly, I'm just not really down with his voice. So, I mean, if people enjoy it, that's cool. This is not Johnny G's bag.
A lot of commenters were not happy about the CMT logo in the video.
Well,
so, yeah. But no, I get that. I can only take so much of this. I'll listen to stuff like this maybe like a couple times.
I just can't take this mid-tempo stuff, man. I want to get down. I want to get funky. So I need to be super fast or super slow, you know. Just like my lovemaking. Moving on to the last track, last news article, is the members of the Stooges are releasing an album without Iggy Pop, but they will have guest vocalists. Basically, James Williamson of the Stooges, of Raw Power Era Stooges, he's putting out an album of unrecorded, well, some of them actually have been recorded in demo form, but not mainstream released tracks from the Raw Power Era that were not on Raw Power. Some of the guest vocalists include Jello Biafra, Ariel Pink, Terry Genderbender of Les Boucherettes, and other people. Honestly, I'm excited to hear Jello do a track with James Williamson, but I think this is a little weird. And honestly, like, whenever you have like albums where like every track is a different singer, they never really seem to coalesce. You know, it's just like, and here's another track, and here's another track. I would rather have like a single just like Jello and James Williamson than with like, you know, like everybody, you know, like just like all the different singers. I don't know.
Yeah, I agree with you. Those things never quite seem to hold together in the way that you want. And I'm scraping my brain right now for a few exceptions that work, and they're pretty out there. So I don't, yeah, I'm going to say these things usually don't work. I mean, partly is that you'll go through and you're going to pick and choose the couple vocalists that you actually really like out of the batch, and then those are the songs that you're going to like. But then because they're kind of packaged with the rest of these things that you might not, then, you know, it's going to be the kind of thing that's going to not necessarily have the shelf life or the, you know, the replay value that you're going to expect it to. Is it not super weird that Pop is completely unaware of this?
That's a good point you bring up. It, according to Rolling Stone magazine, through his PR people, Iggy Pop says he wasn't ever asked to join this. But honestly, with big bands like this, communication can be terrible because people like to imagine that people in their bands are like all pals and hang out, which is true with some bands, but with other bands, it's like being married to somebody for 35 years. Like, it kind of just becomes like a business relationship. They don't hang out anymore, you know? And so maybe he did ask and he just didn't get a response. So he was like, all right, well, if Iggy's not going to respond, then I'm just going to do it myself. It's my music, you know? And in a way, it is James Williamson's music. He wrote the guitar, you know? So, but I guess if Iggy truly wasn't asked, that's kind of sad because it would be cool to hear Iggy do these tracks, you know?
Yeah, you know, I think doing it with just singles might have, I agree, would probably have been a better idea, because this brings to mind that Travis Barker album that was terrible, where he like had different musicians come in for every single track.
But it was rap rock, Ricky. Rap rock. How can you go wrong with rap rock?
Other than Rage Against the Machine, you can always go bad with rap
and
rock.
And Sabotage, young man. Don't forget
Sabotage. Oh, I'm sorry. Sabotage, too.
And yeah. Walk This Way, Young Man. Don't forget Rocked It. Walk This Way.
I debate that.
And Ice-T and Slayer covering The Exploited, Young Man. Don't forget that one.
Fine. I'll take that one. But other than those...
Public Enemy and Anthrax, Young Man. Don't forget that one.
I just don't think...
And Mudhoney and the guy who does I Like Big Butts. You can't go wrong with that one either.
Oh, no,
Sir
you
Mix-a-Lot.
Can't.
Sir Mix-a-Lot. Or I'll stop.
But yeah, I don't. I'm curious about the Jell-O.
Yeah, me too. I wonder what Jell-O thinks about, like, because like Jell-O's hero is Joey Ramone and Iggy Pop, you know. So I wonder what how Jell-O feels essentially replacing Iggy Pop, you know.
I know that'll be interesting.
I would love like a 7-inch EP with Jell-O and Jane Williamson doing like 3 or 4 songs. I would pay $20 for that. You know, I don't need to. I honestly I don't need to hear Ariel Pink singing Iggy Pop tunes. You know,
which is exactly the problem because like if these things were singles, then you could kind of pick the ones that made sense to you.
Yeah.
So, it's something.
I cap it off. We'll just whip through this quickly. Like we mentioned to begin with, vinyl finds. Have you guys had any cool vinyl finds lately? And then we'll play a tune.
Yes, I have. I went to see Pup on Friday in Haight-Ashbury.
Mm.
And
another hot pick by Adam White.
Yes. Thank you, Adam, for recommending them because they were spectacular. Review coming soon of the show.
Interview.
Who interviewed them?
Me.
Oh, nice. Okay. I bought their album. I bought their single where they do a Jay Retard cover.
Oh, which one?
Let me see here. It's My Shadow.
Oh, that's a good tune.
Yeah, they do a good version of it. And then since Amoeba Records is right across the street, I got the Fucked Up Police EP and then the Caskets Full EP, which is the Flatliners. And then in the mail, my first pressing of Reinventing Axl Rose came.
How much did you pay for that?
30?
Oh, that's not that bad.
No.
Adam, I believe you hit a hardcore flea market and got some nice finds.
Yeah, we on Sunday we took my daughter and my brother and we went to the local flea market in St. Catharines, which is. I haven't been there in years, I go there every few years, but I haven't been there like seriously in years. I used to go all the time as a kid, and there are some of the same old, decaying people that are in some of these booths at this thing. That I hate to say, but there's some of them that are just like they're like human moss. You know, it's one of those flea markets where it's just like there is some ancient. Never gonna sell shit in this thing. Boxes of old VHS tapes and crap, and you know. So there's a couple, you know, pretty sizable chunks of old used vinyl that are being sold there. But you know, my 1 year old didn't want to sit in a stroller as I rifled through boxes of records. So I hit the easy target, which was there's a guy that for some reason sells a lot of like brand new indie stuff for a fairly decent price. So I went on a little Nico Case binge, picked up a copy of the New Pornographers' first record, Mass Romantic, which is one of my favorite records ever, and then a copy of The Tigers Have Spoken, which was the record that Nico Case, it was the first one she released on Anti, and more importantly for me, it was the one that she recorded with the Sadies as her backing band, and the Sadies are great. So that's my random weekend Nico Case acquisition pile.
And finally, after an hour and a half, I get to talk about Billy Joel. I'm a pretty big Billy Joel fan. I'm a huge fan of his classic period. Not a huge fan of both the earlier stuff and the later stuff. Huge fan of the classic period. But before Billy Joel was Billy Joel, he was in a group called The Hassles, which actually started out as like a doo-wop R&B kind of group, but kind of morphed into a San Francisco garage rock psychedelic stuff. I picked up there's two albums by The Hassles. I picked them both up, and I gotta say, they're like really, really good. So the only Billy Joel record I need now is a Tilla, which was his heavy metal band between the Hassles and Billy Joel. So that's what I'm on the lookout for. But if you are a Billy Joel fan, or if you are a garage rock / psychedelia fan, check out the Hassles. Both records are really cool. And let's play a tune, shall we?
Sure.
Yeah.
This is Shitty Weekend doing Shit Week.
Thank you.
And thanks for listening to the Punk News Podcast. As always, you can reach us at podcast@punknews.org. There was no more home intrusions during the podcast, therefore demonstrating the power of the podcast. Do not mess with Punk News while we were recording a podcast. The opinion expressed by the members on the Punk News Podcast are the opinion of the people making them exclusively known. I represent the opinion of punknews.org. Other than that, Adam, thanks for being here.
That was a long show. Holy shit.
Yeah, it was. It was like an hour and a half. Ricky, thanks for being here.
Of course. Love doing this.
And
thanks.
World, please, please, I can't take any more of these child pornography stories. No more. No more. Next week, we'll be back, and hopefully we'll be talking about Billy Joel and not about child pornography. We'll see you guys later.